Okay, Matthew chapter 26, if you will. Matthew 26, and we will pick up in verse 17. It says, "Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying to him, 'Where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover?' And he said, 'Go into a city to such a man, and say unto him, The master saith, My time is at hand, I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples.' And the disciples did as he had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now when the evening was come, he sat down with the 12, and as they did eat, he said, 'Verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me.' And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, 'Lord, is it I?' And he answered and said, 'He that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. And the Son of Man goeth as it is written of him, but woe unto the man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had never been born.' Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, 'Master, is it I?' And he said unto him, 'Thou hast said.'" Now, verse 17, it speaks of both the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. We discussed those at length last week, and so we're going to leave off of there, and we're just going to focus on the question that's asked in that particular verse where the disciples asked Jesus, saying, "Where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover?" Now, the parallel passage to this over in Luke chapter 22 identify specifically that it was Peter and John that were inquiring, and it was Peter and John that were also sent to go make those preparations. And Jesus tells them in verse 18, "Go into the city to such a man and say unto him, The master saith, My time is at hand, I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples." And it may seem that those are orders are kind of vague at first glance, but when you go ahead and look at the parallel passages in the other Gospels, in Mark and in Luke, they give a little bit more detail. They tell us that upon arriving in Jerusalem, Jesus is telling Peter and John that upon arriving in Jerusalem, that they would see a man carrying a pitcher of water. And they were supposed to follow that man, and they were to instruct him that Jesus and his disciples were going to come and have the Passover meal at that house. It's very probable that this man that they were to follow was probably a servant in that household. There's a couple of reasons why. One, it's indicated by the fact that he was out fetching water, a pitcher of water he's carrying through the town. He'd gone after water, okay? That's what a servant would do. Also, upon arrival at the house, the information was to be shared with the owner of the house. And over in the book of Mark, it tells us that Jesus said, "Tell the good man of the house." So that indicates the owner, okay? That phrase, "good man," in the Greek, it means the householder or the master of the house. So it makes it very apparent that there was another man that was in charge, okay? So he was the homeowner. So he is to be informed that Jesus and his disciples would be coming to his house to have the Passover meal. This man obviously would have been acquainted with Jesus, probably very likely could have been a follower of Jesus already, because he asked no questions, and it seems that there's no hesitation at all. And so he probably, they referred to Jesus as the master, that means teacher. He was probably already somebody that had put his faith in Christ and knew exactly who they were talking about. So his immediate response was that he would be glad for Jesus to, more than willing to accommodate Jesus, or the master, if you will. So verse 19 tells us, says, "And the disciples did as he had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover." So the disciples get just exactly what they were told, And then there's a lapse of time between verse 19 and 20. During that lapse of time is while the disciples, Peter and John, had gone out and carried out those orders and made those arrangements. And so with that, we pick up in verse 20. And now when evening was come, Jesus sat down with the 12. And as they did eat, he said, "Verily I say unto you that one of you shall betray me." So the disciples have gathered around Jesus for the Passover meal. I want to make note of something. The original Passover meal back that took place in Egypt centuries before had been eaten with great haste. They were to have their loins girded, their sandals on their feet, and their staff in their hand. All of this according to Exodus chapter 12. And it was to be a meal that was taken quickly and in haste. Okay, over the centuries, the commemoration of that, which is the Passover, over time, it had become a much more relaxed event. Because it says here that Jesus sat down with the 12. That phrase literally means to recline, and it implies leisure. And so it was a common practice for them to have a meal around a table and kind of lay around the table, as odd as that may seem to you and I. It was a common thing for any meal at that time. And the Passover meal was no exception. They'd kind of lounged around likely a very low-profile table. This is further proven by the fact that over in John chapter 13, it tells us that the apostle John or the disciple John was leaning upon Jesus' bosom during that time. Well, he'd have a hard time do that if he's sitting up straight in chairs. So it's very obvious that this was a very relaxed atmosphere for this meal, in spite of the fact that it's a very significant meal of commemorating the Passover. Contrary to what you and I would be accustomed to, and actually most cultures would be accustomed to, the more important the event, the more formal the meal is kind of way it is with us. It wasn't that way. Jewish culture was quite different. In fact, John's gospel tells us that Jesus, when the meal was completed, Jesus washed the feet of the disciples, and then it goes on to relay that he continued to sop bread after that. Okay, so you've got a really I don't want to say casual, but a laid back situation here with this meal. And again, that doesn't mean take anything away from the fact it was a Passover meal. That was just the customs that happened then. And so Matthew's account here gives us a little less detail about what was taking place as far as their action was. And really the focus in this rendering of the event is informing them of what Jesus took care of at that table. And that's the issue of the betrayal. He says in verse 21, he said, "Verily I say unto you that one of you shall betray me." And then in verse 22, it says, "And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I?" So Jesus had told them along the way multiple times he had spoke of his impending death, okay? They had a hard time grasping it, but he had repeatedly told them of his impending death. But this is the first time that they had heard anything about a betrayal taking place. So it came as a shock to them. Everybody except Judas, of course, because he knew in his heart what was going to take place. But the disciples, they knew that there was plenty of opposition against Jesus amongst the religious Jews and all of that. But they had no idea that there would be somebody within their group and somebody so close in their group, I was trying to think of another term for it, but somebody that was so close to them, the ideal that someone that involved amongst one of the 12 that would commit this kind of a treachery would have been unthinkable to these disciples. Actually, in ancient times, to share a meal with somebody was a sign of friendship and camaraderie. And so the idea of whoever would betray Jesus would be at the very table having a meal with him just compounded the audacity of things and the evil of the event. It was just an absolute something that was unthinkable in the minds of the disciples. And so it says that they were sorrowful. This broke their heart. They were exceedingly sorrowful and concerned, and so they began to ask one at a time, "Is it I?" Now, this is something we knew that we're seeing in the disciples here. This is showing a certain level of humility and really a level of maturity that has not been there along the way. We've seen time and time again, not to throw them under the bus, but where they have kind of, you know, who's going to be the greatest and blah, blah, blah. And here, they're actually seems that they're recognizing their own sinfulness, their own potential for failure, the possibility that they themselves could be disloyal. It seems that all of these things are being taken into consideration because they're asking the question, is it I? I mean, amongst the 12, they can't imagine who it could be. And so, could it be me? And that's the question that they're asking. And when you take into consideration that for over 3 years, the 12 of them had followed and served Jesus faithfully, and they've done it together and without exception up to this point. And so I'm quite sure they're just shocked by this news, just taken back by it, that they've just heard that somebody in their midst is going to betray Jesus. And perhaps the least likely of the whole group would be Judas Iscariot in the minds of them, because Judas Iscariot was the treasurer of the group. He's the one that handled the money, and that position alone would give a certain amount of trustworthiness, a certain amount of integrity, you would think. Okay, obviously he had them fooled. And so he was probably at the bottom of the list of possible of the 12 that would commit this evil act. But they just didn't have a clue. They didn't know who it was, and each one of them are asking, is it I? And what Jesus says next doesn't seem to give them any more clarity. He says in verse 23, he answered and said unto them, he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. Now, John 13, he tells of this account and gives a little bit more detail by saying that that Jesus, when he said this, he gave Judas a sop of bread. Okay, that's always kind of, I'm just being honest with you, it's always kind of perplexed me when I've read that in John's rendering of it, because I'm thinking, okay, Jesus says the one that sops bread with me next is going to be the one that betrays me, and then Judas gets a sop of bread. And I'm thinking, why did that not just give it away to everybody? Would it not become apparent to the other disciples who the betrayer was? And if they did, why didn't they react? I mean, in my mind, if it was clear to them, then they'd say, no, Judas, you're not doing this, okay? And maybe beat the sap out of him, or beat the sop out of him, if you will. one or the other, but everything indicates that they continued to be oblivious to the idea that it was that Judas was the traitor. But if you look at it and think about it, and I get help with this with a lot of smarter guys I study, okay? You think about it, they had all been at the table very casually eating together that evening. Each one dipping their bread in the dish, not only at the same time as Jesus, but at the same time as one another, and likely passing the bread, dipped or otherwise, to one another. And so for those reasons, it's not so much that Jesus had pointed his finger at Judas as one would think. He knew who it was. Judas knew who it was. But it was done in such a way that they didn't pick up on it, because there was a lot of sopping and passing and eating going on. Okay, and so we go on to verse 24. Jesus says, the Son of Man goeth as it is written of him. We'll stop right there. First of all, this verse gives us a little bit of a divine perspective on the event that Jesus has just predicted. Judas's actions were not some cleverly designed plan that Jesus was going to succumb to, and it was just well crafted and it worked out that way. Nothing like that. But rather, it was something that was foreknown by God, and it was allowed to be something that God put on his prophetic calendar in order to carry out his plans, his redemptive plan. Okay, clearly Jesus could have stopped Judas at any moment. He could have, just as he could have stopped all the things that are about to transpire over the next couple of chapters, he could have avoided arrest, he could have avoided the cross, he could have avoided death altogether, he could have avoided any of those things, but that would not have provided salvation for mankind. And that's what he was here to do. So Jesus simply yields to the will of the Father, and you and I are saved because of it today, okay? But he yields and he declares in verse 24 that, hey, this is written, this is God's will. But then he goes on and he gives this very damning statement about Judas. He says, woe unto the man with whom the Son of Man is betrayed, or by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. So think about this. This is coming from the perfect man that Judas has been following for 3.5 years. He's never seen Jesus make a mistake. He's never seen, witnessed an unkept promise by Jesus. He's never seen a prophecy unfulfilled that Jesus gave. He's never had anything or anybody be able to overpower Jesus or thwart his plans. None of this. So you would think, hearing these words, the words of verse 24, that which is essentially a sentence of doom, you would think that would cause him to have a sobering realization that, hey, I'm wrong here. Hey, you would think that hearing that would say, you know, I've what was I thinking? And I repent, and this whole thing, we're calling it off. I'm gonna set things straight. But of course, that's not what happened. And so the heart that's set on evil can be very hard. Not that it can't be changed, but in this case, it wasn't. Judas was about as set on his evil as anybody ever was. And so his response, and only response, is. And he likely made this response just to keep from looking suspicious. In verse 25, he says, is it I? He asked the same question that the other disciples had asked. And if he had not asked this question, it's likely that the others would have, it would have drawn attention to him, and the others would have said, wait a minute, now I never heard anything out of Judas. Everybody else said, is it I? And so the question, along with the very vague answer that Jesus gives, left the other disciples still not knowing who it was. It won't be long. In the Garden of Gethsemane, they're going to see who it was, but right now they can't imagine that their treasurer was going to be a cohort of the devil. And Judas says that's exactly what he was, okay? So next time we're together, we'll see what happens in the remainder of the story about the Lord's Supper, okay? Or the Passover meal, which is the Lord's Supper. So let's go.